Welcome again this morning. We're glad that you're here. You decided to come and worship with us this morning, and we're excited that you actually made that choice to be here. I heard a funny story about a person that had been married for 60 years. They were having their 60th anniversary. They were excited. They invited family. Everybody was there. And one of the attendants of the party said, "Hey, I'm curious, like, how did you guys succeed in your marriage? I mean, you've been married for 60 years. That's a phenomenon. How did you guys do it?" So the older man looked at the younger person and he said, "Hey, 60 years ago when I said I do, we made a commitment, my wife and I. And the commitment was this, and it was that she would make all the minor decisions and I would make all the major ones." He said, "And so for the last 60 years, I haven't had a single major decision." So I don't know where you're at this morning. It might be that you're like, whoa, like who takes the decisions in your household? Like who makes those major or minor decisions? You know, how do you find success in your relationship? I want you to look at your insert, and in there it says, how to change your husband by faith. I just want to disclaimer this morning, if you're here this morning, if you're a husband, like this is your time. Like to just kind of sit, like don't look at your wife like, like what's about to come, woman. Like you needed to hear this several years ago. This is your time to just sit there, take some notes. Don't do hallelujahs, amens when you hear some points. Like just FYI, if you want to sleep in your bed, no hallelujahs or amens. Ladies, today is going to be a message for you. It's going to be a message that hopefully will help you find success in your marriage. And next Sunday, we'll talk about your husbands or your fiancés or your boyfriends. So this morning, it's a message geared towards you ladies. And because there's a simple thing going on, a simple truth going on today, as it is any other day. And that is that there's a way that a woman seeks to influence and change her husband that though it seems very innocent, can actually be very destructive. There's a way in which, ladies, you go about in relationship with your husband, with your fiance, with your even boyfriends, that you go about these relationships, there's a way in which it seems so innocent and yet is so destructive, especially as it relates to control or change. I want to speak to you girls this morning. You're the one that has an immense potential to influence your relationship for good. It is you ladies that have this immense influence that if you tap into that, you can have such an amazing relationship with your husband. As a matter of fact, Proverbs chapter 14, verse 1, puts it this way. It says, "The wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands, the foolish one tears hers down." You see the contrast? On the one hand, you have the woman that is great potential. You can build your own house. You can have, you know, a home that you enjoy, that you're excited to go to, or you with your own two hands can bring it to destruction, can tear it down. And so you might be here thinking like, well, what must I do to tear it down? And what do I have to do in order to build it up? And that's what we're going to focus on this morning, is that very idea of how do you, ladies, build your relationship up instead of tearing it down. There's two innocent things that often happens that are destructive. Two approaches that are typically taken that instead of building up, it causes a fracture in the foundation. And I want to take you to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. Go there with me. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. And we're going to spend the majority of our time this morning on 1 Peter chapter 3. So just make sure you put something in your Bible there for that passage. Next week, we'll continue that passage when we talk to the men. But this morning, go to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1. And it reads like this. It says, "Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word," I want to pause there for just a moment. The word that is referred to here is the gospel. It's the good news. It's the good news of a relationship with the Father through Christ because of the forgiveness of sin. And it says, if any of them do not believe, ladies, if you have a husband or a fiance or, you know, that doesn't believe, like doesn't have relationship with God, you can't persuade them. It says they may be won over. If any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over or persuaded without words. But as it relates to by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. So here we see it just off the bat. The first innocent thing, though, that ladies, that you tend to do is this idea of words and the use of words. And here in this passage, we see that words can be destructive. You can't change your husband with words. They don't work. You can't change your husband with words. They don't work. And here, Peter says it real clearly. He says, you know, that they may be won over, that you might have influence in your relationship, that you may be able to influence him on the right track, for the positive direction. And the way to influence him is not by the words that are said, it's by the actions that are done. It's not what you say, but rather what you do. Heard this funny story of this guy who wanted to prove to his wife that you know, ladies tend to talk some more than men do. And so he found this article, and this article said that 30,000 words are used by women in a single day. And it said that 15,000 words are used by men on a single day. And so like a knucklehead of a man, he takes that article and he goes to his wife and says, I want you to read this article. Look, here's the evidence. Here is the proof. You guys talk more. So she looked at the article. She looked back at him and said, you know why we talk more? It's because we have to repeat twice what we say. In which he responded with, what'd you say again? The idea, you know, for some reason, like words just do not work. Words do not work. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 13 says this. It says, a foolish woman is clamorous or makes a lot of noise. It's the idea of pots and pans clamoring against each other. It says, a foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knows nothing. Well, what doesn't she know? She doesn't know how to change her husband. She doesn't know how to change her husband. It's interesting because words don't work, and there's something rooted deep inside of us. For men, there's this deep inside of us is this idea that we can neglect our spouses or our relationships. While women struggle with this deep-seated idea that we can nag or fight or be combative with our spouses. And it's a result of the fall. It's a result of Adam and Eve in the garden and the fall there. And so, you know, for example, a woman might say, you know, I'm going to use Charlie as an example. Since he's been here two services, I think we'll give him an example here. It goes like this. So women, you're with your husband and you're like, I can't believe it. Like, you should be more like Pastor Charlie. He takes his wife on dates. Like, he goes in the weekends and goes to Starbucks, and he has good enough sense to take selfies. That's the kind of man that you should be. And he's saying, well, you should have married him. You know, or maybe you're sitting there this morning, and you're thinking, you're saying those comments to your husband like, why can't you be more like so-and-so? Why can't you be more like muscular like Pastor Jesse? You know, he's got rippling muscles. Like, why can't you be like, he's tall, and you know, and he's like, tall, I can't barely see him. Muscles, what do you mean? He's skinnier than a toothpick, you know? So there's these comparison, and you think, ladies, that maybe somehow your words will impact him, and it doesn't have the impact that you thought it would. It doesn't have the impact that perhaps you thought it would when you first said those words. There's a natural tendency, ladies, to use the words and to use those words in a way that we try and control and manipulate. It doesn't come from an ill will attitude. It doesn't come, gentlemen, I just want to let you know, it doesn't come from this desire for a woman to make your life miserable. It doesn't come from that desire. She wants the best for you. He sees greatness in you. He sees you, and she's like, whoa, I want this man to be a godly man that just can aspire to be the best and can be there. So it comes from a good place, but in the process of being in a good place, it actually turns sour along the road. The second innocent thing that tends to be done in the effort of changing a man is this, and that is the use of beauty. The use of beauty. You can't change your husband with beauty. it won't last. It won't last. In the same passage, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 3, I go there, you know, Peter continues this argument of persuasion and how you can persuade your husband. And in verse 3, it says, your beauty should not come from outward adornment. The Greek word for adornment there is the word that is used for cosmos or, cosmetics. That's where it comes from. It says, your beauty should not come from the outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty. Now, what Peter is not saying is that you shouldn't beautify yourself. He's not saying you shouldn't wear nice clothes, not saying you shouldn't wear jewelry. It's not saying that you shouldn't do all these things, do your hair. You know, sometimes we don't even know what color it is, you know? Like, he's not saying you shouldn't do that, but what he's saying is that you gotta be careful. That doesn't become the priority in your life. That you're not so focused on adding external stuff that you forget about the internal stuff. I heard this funny story of this lady talking, wife talking with her husband. The husband says, stop spending. Stop spending, you're spending too much. And he said, you know, pinky swear, I'm not gonna spend anymore. But a month later, he opens the closet and he sees a new dress and he looks at her. He says, woman, I told you not to spend anymore. And she says, oh, but Satan was tempting me. I said, well, didn't you see in scripture, you should tell Satan to stand behind you? I said, I did. He said, I look better from a distance. Like, it didn't matter how much you add, ladies, doesn't matter how much you add. It's not enough. You know, it's beauty shouldn't be the primary focus in how you try and persuade your spouse, your fiance. It shouldn't be the primary focus. It shouldn't be, but yet all too often we find that it is, don't we? We find that becomes the focal point. It's like this lady who, she had a heart attack, went to the doctor. And doctor looked at her and she needed surgery, heart surgery. And as she was doing the surgery, before the surgery, started praying, God, would you just protect me? You know, she got a word from God. And God, during that time, told her, said, you're going to live for 40 years. And she was excited. It's like, I'll go into the surgery, went into the surgery. Doctor went into the surgery. Everything went fine. She's like, you know what? Since I'm going to live 40 years, just go ahead and do some more stuff. And so do some here and some everywhere else. And so she got a whole body checkup. And after a month of being in the hospital, she came out, and as she was walking out of the hospital, a car just hit her, and she went to heaven. And she looked at Jesus and said, Jesus, what's the matter with you? You said I had 40 years. Jesus looked back at her and said, I didn't recognize you. You know, like there's no amount of beauty that we can add. There's no amount of beauty that we can add to ourselves that's gonna help us. In Proverbs 31:30, it says, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. When we're in our 20s, man, we can influence. We get to our 30s, we still got the swagger going on, ladies. You know, it's still there. You start hitting the 40s, you know, it's still there, I hear. 50, I'm gonna stop while I'm ahead at this point. My point being is that at some point, beauty starts fading. It starts fading, and that can't be the thing that you're counting on to persuade your loved one. It can't be the thing that you're using to persuade them. And so many times I've gone to a wedding and officiated so many weddings, and there's times where you have this beautiful couple and you have a beautiful bride-to-be, and in my head I'm thinking, like, you got beauty, but how about the inside? Like, girl, you gotta work on your inside, because all that thing ain't gonna be all that thing in a couple of years, you know? Like, gotta be careful that you don't rest your confidence in beauty. As a matter of fact, what helps change or influence your husband, your spouse, your fiance, your husband-to-be is this: changed women help God change men. Changed women help God change men. That's the key. When I say how to change your husband by faith, I'm not talking about you doing all this formula, this strategy, and how to change him. Rather, what I'm saying is that if you want to change the person that you love so much, more than anyone in this world, it's going to take change in you to see change in them. Go to verse 4 in 1 Peter 3, 4. Go there with me. Peter's continuing this conversation about how to influence a man. And so he's already laid the argument, words don't work. Beauty, it fades. Verse 4, instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. Pause there. I'm not suggesting, ladies, and guys, please don't turn to your wife right now. Don't, you know, you're going to be in trouble. Don't tell them, hey, it's biblical. You got to call me master. That's not what I'm saying, you know. In that time, what would have been, the context would have been like, she has such an honor and respect for him. Like she honors him. She respects him. That's the idea there. Not necessarily the words that are used. It says, you are daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. So here what we see is four things. You know, changing you helps God change him. And we see four descriptions of a woman who's changed. Four descriptions of a woman who's been impacted by God so much so that she begins to change. And the first thing is this. The changed woman is submissive to her husband. The changed woman is submissive to her husband. Now, I know I said that last Sunday, and I'm repeating it again. But here in this passage, we see it twice mentioned. At first, be submissive to your husbands. And then further on, it says, Sarah did that as well. She was submissive too. Now, this is what I want you to kind of think through when you hear this. And the first thing is this. When you hear the word submission, this is what it doesn't mean. And guys, this is where you start writing notes. Like, you do your best here to write notes, at least pretend that you're writing notes so that she could be like, aw, good. He's taking notes. So this is the time that you take notes. And this is what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean, women, that you're dumb. It doesn't mean that you're worthless. It doesn't mean that he can take his thumb on you and say, woman, you're gonna do whatever I say because I say it. That is not what it means. That is not what it means. Ladies, can you say it with me? That's not what it means. That's not what it means. Did I see some attitude over here? Like, that's not what it means. Men, can you say it with me? That's not what it means. That's not what it means. That's right. Men, a little bit louder. They need to hear that you're paying attention. That's not what it means. Say it again. That's not what it means. That's not what it means. See, what it means is that you, women, get to choose. You get to choose. It's a choice. And you choose to be the one that complements his weaknesses through your strengths. You get to choose. And you get to say, I want to help you become the leader that God wants you to become. I want to help you be the leader that God has ordained for you to be in this marriage. That's what it means. When you go to Austin or San Antonio, you're trying to emerge in that lane. You know, one car has got to give in. One car has got to go first. You can't have both cars trying to go first. It's going to crash. It's going to be destruction. There's going to be some injuries. And it's the same thing in a relationship. You can't both go first. One has to go first. That also means, like, do you use your words to help him, encourage him in that area? So second of all, a changed woman is respectful in her conduct. A changed woman is respectful in her conduct. We saw that in verse 6. It says, you know, it uses the word reverence and then later uses the word master. And the idea is this, is that for a man, he needs to be honored and respected. He needs to feel that way. He needs to feel like, man, when you look at him, he is Mr. Hunk, Mr. You give him honor and respect. But you might be saying this morning, but he's not honorable and he's not respectable. How can I respect a man that doesn't do the things that are respect worthy? And I want to tell you this, is that it's a command. It's not a suggestion. And just as women ought to be loved unconditionally, so ought a man be respected and honored unconditionally. I don't know if you ever noticed going to the store and buying for Valentine's, you know, when you go to get the card, you know, very seldom would you find a card that man will be like, oh, it's so mushy, I love it, you know. Generally, the cards, you read them, and the you know, women, you know, that you look at it, most of you, and you're like, oh, my heart melts, you know. He thought of me. I'm telling you, the guys aren't thinking that. They get that card and they're reading it and they're like, okay, what's this mushy stuff? Like, let's go out on a date kind of deal. Because men are wired a little bit different. You know, for women, love, that's what that's your core need. But for men, it's respect, and which is why we have so many men in the military, because they know that that is a place where they can find honor and respect. In Proverbs 12, verse 4, King Solomon puts it this way. He says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband. But she who shames him or dishonors him or disrespects him, but she who shames him is like rottenness in the bones. There's no easier way than to destroy a man than to use dishonor and shame. That's like cancer in the bones. So how do you show respect? Here's six things that you can show respect, how you can show respect. First of all, appreciate his desire to work and achieve. Appreciate his desire to work and achieve. You know, the reality is that most men, we like to build things. Now, some of us are better than others. You know, for some of us, there might be some spare parts, you know, like with me. But hey, it's still a desire to work and achieve. And so you got to look at your man and just appreciate the fact that he's trying, that he's working. Amen. That he's working countless hours, not because he wants to run away from you, but because he wants to be able to provide. He wants to work and achieve something for himself. And man wants to make a name for himself. And you got to honor and respect that and appreciate that about him. Number two, you also can show respect by appreciate his desire to protect and to provide. Show a desire to protect, honor his desire to protect and to provide. You know, several years ago, and actually over a decade ago when we were in college, I remember this one time we were, you know, paying the bill. We were just, you know, giving the school our check so we can go to class. And I remember this one time we were in line and, you know, there was a guy in the front row that was just talking disrespectfully and dishonoring to a girl in front of him. And Marisa said something to, you know, kind of settle the guy. And in my mind, I was thinking, no, like the guy was like 6'4", you know, muscular, big, you know, he looked like an athlete. Well, I like me, you know, but, you know, he was in front of me and stuff. And I was like, what is he going to do? And the guy turns around and says, what'd you say? And Marisa, oh, she's got land blood. She was like, yeah, it was me. Like, what? And I was like, hey, wait a minute. I stood up and I was like, there was a moment of truth, by the way. I stood up and said, what? What's going on? Yeah, she said that. You know, you got to do the chest. Like, yeah, she said that. So what? Like you got to be kidding me. It's like, no, I'm not kidding anything, man. Like, you shut up and turn around. He turned around. And I was like, oh, man. I felt like a little girl afterwards, like, hi. I felt like, oh, no. He didn't fight me. But there's this inward desire in all of us. Doesn't matter how short or tall or big or strong you are. There's this desire to provide and protect, to be the guy who comes to the rescue and says, I will protect you. I will protect you. Marisa will often ask me the question, and I usually answer it in a wrong way. She'll say, baby, will you swim in shark-infested waters to bring me lemonade? There's no easy way to answer that, by the way. And so at that point, I'm thinking, okay, first of all, I don't know how to swim. But if I didn't know how to swim, lemonade? No way. But if your life is at risk, absolutely. Ladies, I want you to realize that your loved one, he would give up a limb if he had to demonstrate to you how much he cares for you. He would give up his very soul for you. We're wired that way. So appreciate his desire to protect and to provide. Number three, appreciate his desire to be strong and to lead and to lead. Appreciate the desire that he wants to lead. He wants to make decisions. So next time you're in the car and you say, honey, what should we eat? This or this? Whataburger or the rodeo? And when he says the rodeo, don't tell him, never mind. You know, we're going to go to Whataburger. Like, honor, if you're going to ask him to make a choice, let him make the decision. Appreciate his desire to be strong and to lead, to make choices, to want to lead in the home, you know. He doesn't have it all together, ladies. You know that. I don't have to convince you of that. He needs your patience. Number four, appreciate his desire to analyze and to counsel. Appreciate his desire to analyze and to counsel. We all know this is true. They're ready to fix it. You come home with a problem. Oh, I can't believe Susie did that. And he's like, this is the way you do it. You go to the boss, and then you write a report, and you're like, would you just listen to me? He wants to fix it. You want to just vent. Like, he's wired that way. He wants to analyze the situation and give you some counsel. Just, you know, just FYI, you might just want to tell him, he's like, baby, I know you want to help me. Like, right now, just listen to me, and then you can solve away. Give him enough room. Appreciate his desire instead of just like, be quiet. Number five, appreciate his desire for shoulder-to-shoulder friendship. For shoulder-to-shoulder friendship. I found it amazing and so amusing that for women, you ladies like face-to-face. When you talk to each other, it's face-to-face. And it's like, it's face-to-face. As a matter of fact, if Ziana comes and sleeps in our bed and it's pitch dark, our little daughter, what she'll do is she'll be talking. And if we turn on the lights, her face is probably face towards me because face-to-face, something happens, and now you need to talk to her, right? So you get into a fight with another woman, and you're like, let's talk. Can we meet? It's not even texting. It's like, let's meet. Let's talk. Guys aren't wired that way. We're not wired that way at all. We're wired shoulder to shoulder. If we get into an argument, like, you know, for guys, you get into an argument, next time we see each other, hey, what's up, man? High five. We're all good. Don't talk about the argument. That's not with women. It's friendship. Shoulder to shoulder. Shoulder to shoulder. So, for us men, a drive to the big city of Seguin can be such an awesome connecting point, especially if there's no talking. You will drive 20 to 30 minutes somewhere, not have a single word from him. And at the end of that journey, he'll say, man, we spent such a good time with each other, didn't we? And you're like, what? We didn't say anything. It's like, we're just bonding, you know? We're shoulder to shoulder bonding. Because we're wired that way. We'll watch a TV show together, not have to give any commentary. Like, no commentary, please. And we'll be like, after the show, it's like, wasn't that great? We just bonded. And she's like, I didn't even get to share what she was really up to in that show. You know, because you need to talk about it. And so you got to honor, appreciate the fact that he went shoulder to shoulder. He went shoulder to shoulder. Number six, you got to appreciate his desire for sexual intimacy. His desire for sexual intimacy. That's a way of showing honor and respect. You got to know his rhythm. You got to know his rhythm. Number three, a changed woman is gentle and quiet in her approach. A changed woman is gentle and quiet in her approach. And verse 4, I think, exemplifies it. It says, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. The unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. You know, the word for gentle there is unassuming. In other words, that ladies, you don't assume that you're all that. You don't assume that you're better than your spouse. You don't assume that you're it and that's it. That settles it. Quiet here is the word that is used without turmoil. That's literally without turmoil. It doesn't mean you don't communicate. It doesn't mean that you don't say, like, hey, we need to talk about this. It doesn't mean those things. You still communicate. But what it means is there's no turmoil. It's without turmoil. It's the wife that calms the storm, not stirs the pot. It's the wife that calms the storm, not stirs the pot. Proverbs 27:15 puts it this way. It says, a quarrelsome wife is like a constant dripping on a rainy day. Restraining her is like restraining the wind or grasping oil with the hand. Like, there's real value in that. And you might be, well, that's not my personality, Jesse. We all need to grow. We all need to grow. I find it fascinating that here Peter says that God rewards that. It says, great worth in God's sight is this unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. In other words, God looks at you and he says, this is awesome. It's like having a picture book, an album, and looking through it and searching the pages and seeing all these women that God is saying, that is awesome, that is beautiful, that is great, that is wonderful, that is precious to me, that is precious to me. Number four, and by the way, ladies, that's why next Sunday you got to drag your husbands in here, because we will encourage them as well to be what all that God has intentioned them to become as well. So number four is the changed woman is spiritually focused on God. The changed woman is spiritually focused on God. Look at verse 6. It says, you are her daughters if you do what is right. Spiritually focused. The spiritual woman, she knows that she could pursue God and God is going to control the change. That the change ultimately comes from God and his timing and his way. Don't give up, ladies. Don't give up. In Proverbs 31:30, it says, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord can be praised or should be praised. At the end of the passage, it says, don't fear, because it's scary, isn't it, ladies? Just be real for just a moment. It is scary to take the position of, I'm going to allow God to do the changing, and I'm just going to allow God to do a work inside of me. It is scary. It really is. But it's proven. When you do that, you begin to see change. You begin to persuade your husband. Last couple of weeks have been pretty interesting, actually. Marisa started using the Power of a Praying Wife book of prayers. And I want to encourage you ladies to, you know, go purchase it, you know, write it down, go to a Kindle, go to Amazon, get yourself this copy. And Marisa, what she does is every single day she's praying for me. Sometimes you don't know what to pray, so this is where a booklet comes in handy. And she would just pray a prayer a day for me, sometimes multiple prayers, and I do the same thing for her. But behind this is the idea that Marisa understands that she can't change me. Come on, I mean, I'm stubborn. She can't really change me. But God can, and God has. God has. God continues to change me, but she continues to pray for me that God would do in me the thing that he needs to do in me in order for me to reflect God in my life.